Pyramids were built by aliens. I hate that theory. That theory is so stupid. Because, like, it describes ancient civilizations as so ungodly stupid, you know? Like, the Egyptians were so smart. They used water level. People were like, oh, it's too precise. They used lasers. No, they put sand in between their blade and their target to grind it better. That's how they could cut through stuff like limestone. They use the sand. You look around, it's sand. They fall against the sand. Oh, that cuts better than like a hammer. So they used it. And it's so stupid because they're like, oh, how they cut through the limestone. Look around, it's sand everywhere, you know? And like, oh, how are they so level? Name one thing that's always level, always.
Waldo.
Name one thing that humans always have.
Waldo.
Yeah, they used water. They would flood a small part, make it level, and then they would cut it with sand. And people were like, how are they so precise? Well, they used what they had at the time. They wanted to be impressive. They built them as tombs to who they believed were children of gods. You think they would do it half-ass? And I saw a theory, oh, some people believe the Sphinx is like thousands of years older than Egypt. No, the hell it's not. How? Because people were like, oh, it has traces of like being flooded a little bit. So it's probably made at a time before Egypt was a desert. And I'm like, okay, that's fair to an extent. It wasn't always a desert. It wasn't made before Egypt wasn't a thing. It wasn't made before like friggin', what is it, Pangaea, you know? And like, people are stupid. Some people are like, maybe Atlantis was under the ice. And it's like, maybe Atlantis wasn't just a story. There's a theory that it was actually under the ice. First of all, Atlantis was a story. Me and Jacob were talking about this on the last day at sea. Also, it's one of the many things. Charlotte sat down with us and she's like, what do you guys talk about religion? Are you just making that up so I leave? No, we were talking about religion. We were talking about Atlantis at one point, and he's like, I don't know why people keep looking for it. It was literally a story. Plato made it up. Or if he didn't, he took it from something, and then he wrote it as a story. It was a poem. It wasn't like a theory. It was about humans pretending to be gods and then getting flooded by said gods. And that was.
All right, all that being said, there is a sunken island off the coast of Greece.
Does it have alien technology?
No,
Does it
but
have good technology?
yes,
Really good technology?
not like today's
For
technology,
its time?
for its time.
Like about as much as Athens?
Yes.
And people keep obsessing over it.
Well, there is a thought that that was the basis of the myth
I
of
mean, maybe,
Atlantis.
but then people go totally off the rails because they're like, satellite images show that Antarctica, it's like, has weird patterns under the ice. Well, of course it's gonna have weird patterns. It used to be a swamp and now it's literally ice. It's gonna have weird patterns. And how would Plato know what's under Antarctica?
No, the more mainstream thinks that the story of Atlantis was embellished from a story of an actual island that was essentially blown up by a volcano and sunk. And that's where the myth of Atlantis comes from. And it's just been embellished over the years.
But it's still just a myth. It's like it has the same amount of power as Mount Olympus. Like it has legitimately the same type of origin, the same amount of
Yes.
like feasible power as Olympus. Like Olympus, no, it's like a tall mountain. It's based off a real mountain and it houses the gods, right? No one's like, oh, mainstream science will tell you that Olympus doesn't exist. No, of course it does. Nope, but no one overhypes Olympus. But everyone overhypes Atlantis. And I don't get it. No, it's because they don't believe in Greek gods. Because they say, hey, if you don't follow Christianity, you're not real. Or whatever. But like, it's because Olympus isn't based off Christian things, but Atlantis can still be feasible even alongside Christianity.
Yes, because Atlantis was sunk before Christianity existed, I believe.
I hate conspiracy theorists.
I agree.
And I don't mean the ones that just like believe, like, I think Bigfoot could be real. The only conspiracies I will ever give a chance is from the Vatican
Okay.
or other religious texts. There's a lot of it even that people believe are conspiracy theories, and a lot of it is just hidden. And I believe in the theories that they're hiding shit, and I believe in the theories that they made up shit.
Hello, and welcome to Canyon Creek. I'm Bill Gannon, and I'm here with my wife Jessica and my sons Ian and Colin, and today we'd like to talk about.
Let's see what we could do here.
Yeah.
Okay, hi. I thought we were doing Google Meet.
Oh, Google Meet. No, no, sorry. I've never tried Google Meet.
Oh, that's
Is it like spam?
It's like FaceTime.
Ah, it's like FaceTime.
That's what you sent. That's what I'm on right now.
I apologize for that.
No, no worries. That's why I was like, oh, you must be using this for recording. So I was curious about it.
I should try that, see how that works. Chris, thank you for meeting us today.
So, this will be fun.
Aside from me, we have Ian and Colin.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Well, they sound enthusiastic.
Yeah.
The enthusiasm is one with us.
So is the sarcasm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are the voice drops.
What do you mean by
the voice got deeper?
Yes, Colin's voice got deeper.
Yeah, I noticed that. That was substantially deeper than the last time.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you say? You just burped into the microphone. Excuse me. There you go.
Burp? Like cover. Disgusting teenage boy.
You're also a disgusting teenage boy. I don't want to hear about
it. Yeah, but my voice doesn't crack.
Yes, it does. Well, no,
it did.
Yes, huh?
All right, so welcome back to Canyon Creek.
All right, well then, if we're going to do this on the phone, I'm going to go ahead and pop my headphones in. Well, and let's just check the audio quality on the headphones. Sometimes they come out as tinny, and mine are showing that for some reason my headphones. Oh, no, it's showing that they were good.
Okay, good.
Hear this?
Yeah, all I can hear you really nice and clear now. How about us?
Okay. Yeah, you can sound really, really clear. What's going on?
Not much. Towards the end of our last broadcast, Ian went on a rant a little bit, I guess you could say, about aliens and the pyramids, and then it led us to Vatican conspiracies and how he hates conspiracies, or at least conspiracy theorists. And he's just nodding his head to everything I'm saying. So I tasked him with 5 Vatican conspiracies. These are conspiracies that are going to be strictly around the Catholic Church and the Vatican in particular, because they have a vault and Lord knows, probably quite literally, what's in there.
What's in it?
So I'm going to let Ian drive. I did a little bit of homework. Chris, I know you said you weren't quite as up to specs on it as you might want to be, but that's fine. Yeah. And Colin's going to add some color commentary while he's not guzzling down his brisk ice.
It's finished.
Oh, thank you. No. Yeah. Now it's pretzels. All right. Here we go.
All right.
So I have 5 theories. There's one called the Chronovisor, which is pretty cool. One about the 18 missing years that were unrecorded moments in Jesus's life. One about Pope Joan, the alleged woman pope. One about the Red Pope, which is a communist theory, and one about a corpse trial, which is almost exactly what you think it is. So, first off, the Chronovisor. It's said to have been a device where you could kind of...
Do you want to first find out if your uncle's ever heard of any of these?
Oh, yeah. Have you heard of any of these?
That's basically a device for looking back in time at various historical events.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Not to be confused with a time machine where you go there. Chronovisor, you simply look and hear it, but you don't go there. There was a man named Pellegrino Ernetti, Father Pellegrino Ernetti, and he was highly respected in the field of theology by many valid people to respect, not like conspiracy theorists, not like one of these pseudosciences things, but genuinely within the Vatican, he was highly respected. He defended a lot of things, a lot of them believed to be true, and one of them was the Chronovisor. Until the day he died, he defended it with his life, constantly saying it's real, that it exists, and that it has been used before. And while all evidence and documentation of it, like pictures, because it was really just pictures, have been disproven, his account is still held in a strong sense of validity. Whoa, I cannot speak. His perspective is seen as valid. So there is a little bit of suspected truth in what he says. I don't know. For some reason, I can't speak right now. But basically, his account is valid. Also, well, believed to be valid. Also, there's a team of 12 scientists to look into it, allegedly created. I'm saying allegedly because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
10 of those names were never disclosed to the public. 2 of them were Enrico Fermi and Von Braun. Both of those, I'm sure you know, were highly respected scientists.
Yeah, yeah.
So while they never spoke on the subject in their lives, they were said to have worked on the project. And one other thing, the Vatican announced in 1988 that if you use a device, not if you talk about a device, not if you post in the news about a device, anything like that, if you use a device similar to the chronovisor, then you will be excommunicated from the church, which also brought...
Why? Some...
Oh, because they didn't like it. They were... It's like, I don't know why. It just said that. I don't know. I'm not...
Well, I mean, it just seems like... I mean, like, that would be the equivalent of, you know, fact-checking in a debate, you know, a political debate. It's like, why would you not want fact-checking? If these historical events actually happened, why would you not want everybody being able to look back in time and see what actually happened?
Yeah.
Unless you're hiding something.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it comes from.
Yeah. So...
Don't look behind the curtain.
So from that announcement in 1988 and Pellegrino Ernetti's account defending it until literally the day that he died, both add to the suspicion of its genuine existence. Although, again, all the evidence, like pictures, have been disproven. One of them was a picture of a statue of Jesus getting crucified that they claimed was a picture taken from the chronovisor of him getting crucified. Yeah. And one of them was a picture of him walking through a field, which was...
Okay, so as a junior scientist, you know, let's take a look at how is this device looking back through time?
So I got a little bit of background on that.
Then,
Chris, you can come in with what your thoughts are, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So,
sure. I mean, I've got questions right now, more than thoughts. But
Father Ernetti was a scholar of, quotes, archaic music. All right, and I got this off of discovery.com. That it's work that involved reconstructing sounds of the past. He believed that events from the past left behind visual and audio energy traces, which can be called, and then allowing that person to either listen to or see the past, sort of like a TV into the past.
But how? How?
Just by capturing these energy signatures.
But that's my question, is how?
It's just,
I mean, capturing energy signatures, that's like saying, oh, well, I'm just vibrating on a different frequency.
I'm not the Pope.
That means nothing without actual, you know, what is the definition? What is the definition of this energy? What is the definition of, all right, so it's capturing energy from what?
Well, and I think that's where he enlisted the help of Enrico Fermi, who was an Italian physicist who also worked on the
nuclear reactor,
the Manhattan Project. Also, Wernher von Braun, who was a Nazi scientist who came over to the U.S. via Operation Paperclip and helped establish NASA. The way it was described, as I read it, Chris, is it essentially is a bunch of cathode ray tubes and diodes, essentially the inside of an old-fashioned TV set. And you turn the TV or receiver into the right frequency. However you did that, it was never made clear because it's supposed to be held secret now.
Yeah.
But yeah, as he's claimed to have seen the crucifixion of Christ, there was a speech that Cicero gave, and then he also saw the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. But as Ian said, a lot of these were hush-hushed and, you know, you're not allowed to talk about it.
Legitimately, any picture that was disclosed to the public was traceable to another thing that a person made.
So, Chris, with your experience and knowledge, how do you think you would capture energy traces that are over 2,000 years old?
Okay. Well, let's take a look. And I'm going to go ahead and qualify that, you know, I have a background in general sciences, electrical, biomedical, nuclear engineering, you know, adjacent topics and things like that. So I'm not an expert in physics or anything like that, but I am, you know, moderately versed, you know, for a layman. The thing is, like, right off the bat, you can't, you know? It's like, the best analogy I can think of is using a flash bulb, you know, the flash for your camera. Once that flash has actually flashed and that light is now, bam, that's transmitting through the universe from that point of origin
outward. So if you want to capture that flash sometime after the fact, you've got to go, you know, somehow get yourself out ahead of it and wait for it to come to you. You know, you can't actually just watch the flash propagating through space. Where are you while that's happening? So this whole being able to peer back through time, and now I'm not saying time travel is impossible, you know, because how little we actually know about time. I think it certainly is possible to go back in time with some caveats, you know, like the black hole time travel door is basically, all right, so you have this portal. If you can create a portal in space, which we still cannot do, but you create this portal in space. So here's an entrance and an exit. All right, now you take the exit and you go pop it near a black hole somewhere so that the closer it sits to the black hole, the slower time goes for that device. But your other device is currently sitting here in real time. So then when you eventually, sometime down the road, collect that device from the black hole, time has slowed so much for that device that there is now a gap between device one and device two, the black hole device. Whereas your current device, device one, exists in your time frame. But the portal device, the black hole one, that will let you out sometime in the past, but only after that device had been created. So that is theoretically the only way people are agreeing that time travel is possible, is something like that, where you have a portal. Now, we don't have the technology to create portals. We don't have the technology to travel close to a black hole and back in a reasonable amount of time. You know, all sorts of technical hurdles along that. And that's like the physicality of going back in time. To actually view or try to witness events, I don't know how that would even be possible. I mean, I remember decades ago when I was a kid, somebody said that they were able to extract Jesus's Sermon on the Mount from upper level atmospheric vibrations. Like they actually thought they recorded the sound, but they didn't. That was their claim, though, because that sound would have just dissipated into heat, more or less. Mm-hmm. You know, my speaking right now, I'm just moving air molecules. At some point, it's going to disperse so much so that all it is mild vibrations just slightly warming up. You know, bumping into other air molecules and slightly warming up.
And being inaudible,
There's no way to actually pull something I said out of the air, let alone something somebody said over 2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, short answer for me is how would it be possible to record this thing? It isn't.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just according to everything we know, everything science knows, at this moment in time, and granted, we don't know everything, that's not possible.
So, Uncle Chris, in terms of sound, you've made it quite evident that it's pretty much just a no, as far as we can understand.
As far as from my angle,
So, in terms of the vision aspect of it, because light, the perception of light, like, we can look at other planets light years away. Mm-hmm. Granted, we're looking at it a year ago, because it's light years away, or at least a year ago, if it's at least a light year away. What if the concept of the visual part of the chronovisor, since it only sees and hears, take out that hearing part for a second, since it only sees, it doesn't actually take you there. What if it just is able to see Earth from a certain distance in space? So it's able to telescope.
So let's go with that. If it's able to see Earth from a certain distance in space, so let's say you want to watch, so the crucifixion 2000 some odd years ago, based on our current texts, you know, more or less, you'd have to have an exact time and you know, date. You would have to have a receiver, like a really large telescope that you have then parked 2000 light years away from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you turn that telescope back facing Earth, and now you're looking at, that telescope is seeing Earth from 2,000 light years away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's fine. Yes, we can do that. If, let's say, hypothetically, somebody invents warp travel tomorrow, and we can travel 2,000 light years away and turn the telescope back on Earth, and we can watch what's going on Earth. Now, for that signal to get back to Earth, it's going to take another 2,000 light years. because you're going to be transmitting. All right, so your telescope is out there 2,000 light years away, looking at Earth to watch the crucifixion, and it's videotaping this, and it wants to send us that information. Well, that's that video feed is going to take 2,000 years to reach us. So even if this device did exist and they did drop a telescope 2,000 light years away, somehow, you know, teleport. I mean, hell, if you can teleport, then why not 2,000? But yeah, it's still completely impossible because whatever is watching Earth from that far away is still going to take, you know, it took 2,000 light years for that light to get out to that thing for it to see it. And then it's going to take 2,000 years for that light to get back to us. So yeah. Again, the device won't work.
Yeah. Like at that point, we would just have time travel already. We wouldn't need it. So.
Yeah.
I mean, and if we are doing time travel, why not just go back in time and
watch it?
Watch the crucifixion yourself.
Yeah, you're right.
Colin, what do you think?
I don't know what the question really is.
Do you think that technology like the coronavisor would exist and would be useful?
It would be insanely useful. Oh, sorry, I know the question's to Colin, but
assuming. Yeah. We don't die out and we'll stay around for a very, very, very long time. I think it could eventually come, it could eventually be made.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a no on this one. See, that reminds me of like decades ago, you know, I've got a couple of other nephews. You're not the only ones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're very smart kids. And one came up with this idea for an antimatter bomb. where he had all this antimatter, and then when you activated the bomb, it smashed the antimatter into each other, and you know, it's similar to a modern day atom bomb that's using fissile material. But he was using, you know, his vision was to use antimatter and ram it together to create this big explosion. And I was like, well, why not just turn off the containment and let it hit the walls of the container? It's going to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you understand the physics to a point, but not completely. How are you going to peer back in time? Mm-hmm. You have to catch up to the light waves.
Yeah.
You're either have to get out ahead of them and wait for them to catch up to you, or you have to go faster than the speed of light and catch up them. And then you'll basically watch all the events in reverse, and you can record it and then play it back in normal direction. But you know, if you're approaching light from behind it, first of all, there's no way to catch up to it because nothing travels faster than light. And to actually be witnessing something from 2,000 years ago, you would have to be traveling more than 2,000 times the speed of light in order to catch up to it.
Yeah.
So again, you know, so I love fun technology and the idea of fun technology and stuff like that. But then there are some places where it can't happen.
It falls flat. Yeah.
It can't happen. And, you know, who knows, maybe it's tapping into another dimension and then we're peering things through that, but
maybe it's just magic.
We're getting into lots of gray territory.
So that's the coronavisor.
Yeah.
That somehow turned into someone saying 1 times 1 equals 2.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know how he came up. How does one come up?
We'll look for it. We'll find it. It's a interesting read.
All right. So the next one is about the 18 years, because in the Bible, Jesus 1 through 12 was recorded his age. Then there are 18 missing years that the Bible pretty much never talks about. The Torah doesn't talk about it. The Bible doesn't talk about it. The Quran doesn't talk about it. Nothing does. And then he shows up at 30, and that's when he is like, that's his public debut, you know, that's when he's performing miracles and stuff.
Well,
and
that's when he comes out as Superman.
Yeah. And that's when he gets crucified. So everyone knows that part. And a lot of people know 1 through 12, but no one knows the 18 years. And I looked into it and I still don't know the 18 years. There's almost literally no information on it. Not even like from different sources, not even from like,
the Dead Sea Scrolls don't have anything about it. And they've got other gospels off it from various other apostles and followers of Christ.
So even they don't have it. It's like Genghis Khan's tomb, you know? It's highly likely, honestly, at this point, that someone from that time period or someone shortly after said, don't record this. And if you did, destroy it. Because there's no information on it. I look into the timelines of those points between 12 and 30 AD in like politics and other history during that time that isn't directly involved with Jesus. And there's no miracles being performed in India or anything. There's no divine callings or anything from other nations. There's nothing like other conspiracies that you could tie back during those 18 missing years. There's nothing. It's all pretty much just Roman power struggle. So really, that 18 years is just filled with theologians guessing. And I'm saying guessing as in like their theories, not because I don't hold any truth to them, but because, like I said, you really can't prove it. A lot of them think he went on a spiritual journey by just like sitting there meditating, you know, gathering his thoughts, talking to God or his dad, and just like waiting for his public debut.
Some people say Jesus was God, so you could argue he was talking to himself.
Yeah, but everyone says that God is the father of Jesus. No one argues about that, unless if you're an atheist.
Okay,
so some people think he went, or I think there's some people. Some people think he went on a physical journey as well as a spiritual one. Some people think he went to like Tibet and India, Far East, looking around, talking to people, you know. And that's what really caught my eye, because I was like, hey, what if there's like Miracle Man in India who's just like an urban legend? And then, oh, what do you know? That's during the 18 gap. But nope. So people really just don't know.
Yeah, that was kind interesting. Of
disappointing for me.
Yeah, and how would you? I mean, in 18 years, you know, he wasn't Jesus of the Bible at that point. He was, now, according to, because Bill and I both went to Catholic school for a number of years, and although I've forgotten a lot of it, and I'm not practicing by any stretch, I do remember them saying he was a pretty gifted kid, but again, how would they know that? Because who was tracking Jesus's, you know, years as a child since, you know, the birth and the manger and all that, that's one thing. But then, you know, how are they keeping tabs on somebody in the Middle East when they barely have any records? I mean, yeah, they have a census, but they're, it's not like you've got passports and they were able to track your movements all over the place. It's stories. So in that 18 years, all they can do is guess.
Yeah, it's all,
you know, because he hadn't come out as, you know, Jesus, the Son of God yet. You know, he didn't. His first miracle, supposedly, turning water into wine at that wedding.
Yep.
You know, and that was in his, what, he was 30 or something.
Yeah, that's the first known miracle that he performs.
Yeah.
So, again, I did a little bit of a dive into this. And here's, I've got a couple of different sources. One is by Chris Bergwald. I can't read my own handwriting, so I'm assuming it's Bergwald. From the Bishop's Bulletin, Catholic Diocese of Sioux Falls. All right. Essentially,
Sioux Falls. I feel better already to know that somebody from, you know, Falls is on.
It's believed by some that he led a normal life, and that was to show the value, or how valuable life is, essentially. Just take everything you have and be thankful for it, because it has value.
Well, I mean, it is the only life you have.
Yeah.
Unless you're Jesus.
This is the only body you get. And this is the only life you are given. Now, you know, forget about, yeah, we can sit here and start talking about reincarnation and whatnot. But, you know, for as far as we all know, you know, this is the only body you're going to get in this iteration. Like you as Bill Gannon, this is the only body Bill Gannon. Now, if you're reincarnated, you're going to come back as somebody other than Bill Gannon.
So there's a bunch of manuscripts over a period of time that were put out speculating on where Jesus went and what he did. And there are some that have him going to India and China and the Far East.
And all of that is absolutely 1,000% made up, because nobody knows.
But as I
it's
said,
like, oh, we have actually, here's a photo of Jesus' passport. And here's where we saw he hopped on a Cunard and, you know, took a trip to Puerto Rico for a month. You know, no, there is no way to know where he went, when he went. You know,
yes, he did.
And even, I mean, come on. You know, yes, people say the Bible is the word of God. Well, it was still written by men, and it was still written by men hundreds of years after the fact.
The source for this one comes from The Unknown Life of Jesus Christ by Nicholas Nodovich, written in 1894. And it's speculating that he trained as a Buddhist monk in a town or a region of India called Ladakh, L-A-D-A-K-H. Yes. And it's the story describes the travels and studies of the boy slash man named Isa, I-S-S-A. And Isa is Arabic for Jesus. As far as being able to travel in those times, you already had spice routes pretty well drawn out and utilized. And an experienced traveler at that time could have done about 20 miles per day. And there are some Christian stories that claim Jesus walked just over, let's say, 3,000 miles during his whole ministry. That was 3 years, when he was age 30 to 33 when he was crucified. Think of how many miles he could have done over those 18. You're looking at anywhere from 55 to 57,000 miles.
Well, I mean, in 18 years, you're going to stop somewhere to absorb lessons or teach or train or whatever.
But like that's over two football fields. I mean, you can go far away with that.
It is very, you're right. It is definitely over two football fields.
Yeah.
My son, he is very well learned.
Mm-hmm. Yes. 20 miles a day would be more than a couple of, I think we're agreed.
And if you take a look at what he was preaching when he did pop back up, it pretty much goes along the lines of the Buddhist philosophy, Hindu philosophy of minimalism, caring for each other, feeding and caring for the poor, and everything that our current Christians aren't doing.
You heard that. All Christians are Buddhists.
According to that, they all tend to be
according religious. To this, our current Christian mainstream is not living up to Jesus's teachings.
Yeah.
All right. So just like, you know, the chronovisor, how is anybody going to track the years where Jesus was, for all intents and purposes, living off the grid? You know, he wasn't hanging out in Jerusalem or hanging out with his mom. He was, you know, roaming like Kwai Chain Kane from, you know, the old Kung Fu series. You know, who knows where he went? Maybe he had a job somewhere. Maybe he actually was a carpenter and was, you know, just employed and watching people live their lives and the struggles that they had and came to his own conclusions. I mean, who says, you know, he had to be traveling to the Far East to get inspiration for his messaging when it could have been, you know, you can look around and be like, oh yeah, this world is not, this is not a good place. And here are some of the seeds of people's unhappiness. I mean, Jesus's ultimate message, really, if you boil it down, it wasn't about starting Christianity at all. It was about getting back to being good Jews. You know, like, we have these laws, we should stick to them. However, his biggest difference was the you know, laws at the time were more, you know, the Old Testament. It was more focused on what you do on this earth and the things that happen to you here, which is why it was more eye for an eye, tooth for tooth kind of stuff.
Yes.
You know, wrathful, vengeful God, yep, etc. Because there was no concern about your afterlife. Jesus, his message introduced, like, let's get back to being good Jews, but let's also focus on what happens in our afterlife, you know, the kingdom of heaven. This isn't the only kingdom that there is. And then people are like, oh, yeah, we can focus on that. Now, if I lead a better life, I'll get a reward later. So my suffering now has a purpose. That you don't need to be studying Eastern philosophy for. I mean, I think a lot of people will come to the same sort of conclusions. That's just my two.
What about you, Colin? What do you think Jesus was up to for 18 years when there was nothing?
I think he just went to India, performed miracles, but no one ever talked about it.
I think that was one of Ian's points, is the travels that he would have done to get to India. If you were to take a look at various time points that he might have been in, like Syria or Baghdad or wherever path he may have taken to get there, there's nobody talking about a guy from out of town who's talking about love and spirituality. It's just static. It's radio silence. So
the missing 18 years, how could you even theorize? Because, again, nobody was tracking his movements because he was nobody at the time. You know, he hadn't announced his presence to the world. He hadn't pissed off the Pharisees yet. So he hadn't made the Romans uncomfortable by possibly unifying a large group of Jews.
He wasn't, you know, even Christ.
None of that had happened yet, so it doesn't matter. Okay, so here's this kid who was born in the manger, and, you know, that made the news, apparently. But yeah, that 18 years where he wanders off and who knows where he was. I mean, yeah, he could have been just working a job in town.
So for Ian and Colin, the Pharisees were...
I know.
Okay. You want to tell us then?
Yeah, the Pharisees. Matt used to talk about them a lot.
Oh.
He's actually where I learned it from. So one thing, he actually did teach me a little bit about religion, but he didn't know a whole lot about it either. I taught him a lot and he just refused to listen. Pharisees, wasn't that like the group of high-ranking Jews who really didn't like Jesus?
They were the rabbis, the high-ranking rabbis, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, leadership.
Yep.
The church, the religion's leadership of the day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were like, let's get rid of this guy.
He's a threat.
Yep. That's why
he's upsetting our current order of things, and he's making the Romans uncomfortable, which is bad for the Jews. Yeah, you know, it's like this guy is coming in here, and we've got a good thing going so far, and he's messing with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's their perspective.
So
yeah, like that's not going to serve our goals. And he tried to make it personal, like your relationship with God is your relationship with God.
Yeah.
He even said, "Go pray." Pray in secret, you know, you don't have to congregate in a church yet somehow or other. Like Jesus was, his goal was not to start a church, but they started a church around his teaching. And his teachings are basically like, no, the teaching is already there. Just adhere to them. And they created a whole new religion around it.
All right. What do we got next?
All right. Pope Joan, the woman Pope.
Pope Joan. Good, 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 good.
The she Pope, if you will. She was technically never confirmed. Not confirmed as in like she tried to be a pope and she was never confirmed. Like her existence was never confirmed. A lot of the records about her have been erased, meaning there could have never been records about her, but there likely were and they were erased. There are a couple aspects of the Vatican that point to her existence. There are time gaps between two popes of roughly 2 to 3 years, which take place about time of the rumors of Pope Joan. Her existence. There's this one story where she was still believed to be a he, was walking down a street in Italy. All of a sudden, she started going through labor. She started giving birth. And the people around her were outraged because they just found, holy crap, our Pope's a woman. Like, she's not allowed to do that, you know?
And the pregnant woman at that?
There are two endings of the story, depending on who you ask. One of them is, she was peacefully taken away by the guards and then excommunicated. The other one was she was beaten to death by the villagers because they were so enraged that they were fooled. And that street is like, you know how they're like haunted houses and stuff? That's one of Italy's haunted streets. You're not allowed to walk there. Or if you do, beware. You know, like, it's one of those ghost things. One more thing is there's a seat with a hole in it. At a certain point in the Vatican's history, there became a seat that the Pope would have to sit on, and there was a hole in the middle of the seat, and the newly elected Pope wouldn't wear pants, and he'd sit on it. So his testicles hang below the seat from the hole, and then someone else would look under the seat. He would inspect them and be like, yep, they exist. And some people thought, well, a lot of people believe it to be an act of humility, so the Pope, you know, doesn't get an ego. But a lot of people think it's to confirm that the Pope is actually a dude ever since Pope Joan.
We've seen your junk.
Yeah.
Well, I would think there are a few other ways of keeping the Pope humble, too. Like, mm-hmm. How about not adorn him with gold? How about drop all the opulence and maybe just live a simple, like, simple monk's robes? You know, mm-hmm. If you want to stay humble, you know, wear yourself some burlap. So, I don't think... necessarily having your boys hang down in an open hole chair. And first of all, that didn't even sound comfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a toilet seat, effectively, is what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that explains why so many of them were named Pope John.
Mm-hmm.
and this isn't like the street where it's just a store. Now, you can see the seat. Like, it is in the Vatican. And I think... Mm-hmm. Leo sat on it too. I think he had to.
How do we know that wasn't the porta potty?
I don't know. Well, there's no walls around it. Yeah, it's like on a podium.
It was a portable porta potty. That's why it's a porta potty. It's portable.
It's on a podium. Why would you just shit on the floor? you're just shitting on the floor. Why would you need a seat for that?
exactly.
So, Yeah, a lot of people think that's a result of Joan fooling all of them.
According to Wikipedia, Pope Joan was Pope from 855 to 857, which, ironically, is only about 30 years before we get to Pope Formosus, the corpse pope. Mm-hmm. She resigned as Popus after serving only a couple of years. So was she fictional or not? It's hard to say.
Let's look at the times. I don't believe for a second they would have elected a female pope.
Well, they didn't know patriarchal
and misogynistic.
They didn't know it.
No, they didn't. She entered the priesthood as a way to follow her lover, because at the time, you didn't have to be celibate to be a priest or to be a pope. A lot of popes were married. A lot of popes had children. The Borgias, for example, are one of those papal families.
Okay.
So she followed her lover into the church, and over the years, dressed as a man, because that was his request, because that was the only way she could follow him in, she actually elevated in the church. She was promoted to bishop. She was promoted to cardinal. She was promoted to all these higher seats in the church until finally in 855, she was made pope. So some writings have her referred to as Pope John, or at least her name as being John when she entered the church. She's been described as being talented and learned. She rose through the church hierarchy. Ian's right. He said that her gender was revealed when she gave birth during a procession. Now, some folks feel that she died shortly after, but it's not sure if it was murder or natural causes. And there was nothing ever said about the infant that was supposedly born at the time.
Yeah, I'd be more curious about that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, so she actually, the Pope had a baby. That would be a pretty holy baby, wouldn't it?
I mean, yeah.
By church doctrine, it's never supposed to happen, but...
And
yeah, I would think there would be more about the baby if such a thing ever actually happened.
I think you're right, Chris, because there are claims that she was removed from all the Vatican's official lists of popes and or priests in that time period. So stories accumulated over the years and later interpolated into a book called the Chronicon Pontificum et Importatum by Martin of Opava. In the 13th century. And like I said, she entered the church to follow her lover, and the procession path which she took is no longer in use. Nothing stated about being haunted or not. So don't know about that part.
Okay.
So, all right. So, yeah, I mean, she would have had to have been highly intelligent.
Yes.
Especially to like recognize these yahoos, and she could pull one over them. Yeah.
But throughout this whole time, she never said, but I'm not a dude. I'm, you know, this, she kept her secret if she existed for pretty much her whole life until that moment along the procession path. That's a good long time.
I'm just thinking about her boyfriend, you know, think about him. His, it's like, wait a second. How did you become Pope?
I brought you into this.
I'm the one who's in the church here. You're the one who followed me. And then somehow or other you leapfrogged me and you became Pope and I didn't. I think that would have been cause for a breakup.
Oh, definitely. Hey, guess what? I'm Pope. You're not. You know, that would suck.
That's a total neener.
It absolutely is. What about your thoughts on that one, Colin?
Yeah, you said there was a time gap between two popes.
Yeah, and it was roughly 2 years, which, as you said, what was it, 857 to 859?
855 to 857, but you were close.
2 years. So I'd have to date check when that two-year gap was. But if it's between that, I feel like that'd be pretty solid. I'm just saying.
I think so.
Like, I don't believe in a lot of these.
There could be a 2-year gap between popes and no big deal. I believe we've had that before.
I know.
The whole papal election process is not a fast one.
Oh, yeah. But it's specifically at that point is when Joan was said to have been pope. And if that 2-year gap is specifically between 55 and 57, I feel like that'd be a funny coincidence. Just saying. Of all the things on this list that I do believe, well, you can't really believe in the 18 years because there's nothing to believe really for that conspiracy. But of any of them, I feel like the most believable would probably be Pope Joan. Second Red Pope, which I'll talk about next. But
All right. Then, yeah. So I want to hear about that. What?
So
what's the Red Pope? Know nothing about it.
So the Red Pope. God, when was this? I forget when this was, but at one point during the Pope election process, the smoke was white, which obviously means there's a new Pope elected. But then the smoke stopped being white. That rising out of the chimney, suddenly it was black smoke. And the people mid-celebration were looking back up and they were like, why is the smoke black now? And they're heavily confused. The church blamed this on a malfunction. You know, they used the wrong powder or something, or they jumped the gun. But the theory is that the Cardinal Joseph Siri was going to be elected, and actually was. It is recorded that he had a sufficient amount of votes to be Pope. He even had a name chosen, Pope Gregory the Fourth. I forget which number, but it was Pope Gregory. And this was at a point, this part starts to get less believable. This was at a point where tensions between the Communist Party and everyone else was pretty high, and soon to be Pope Gregory was heavily anti-communist, heavily, like the random American boy you find in Texas, anti-communist. And the theory is during the election there's a nuclear threat from a communist country, an ally of the USSR. There's a threat of nuclear war if the Pope was so anti-communist, and so they changed their decision to someone who was less outspoken about it. And when asked about it, Joseph Siri refuses to speak on the subject on the meeting. So the second part about the nuclear threat, I don't entirely believe in, but I don't know. It's interesting. But as Dad has pointed out, who was it?
John Paul II.
Pope John Paul II during, what, the 80s?
The 80s.
During the 80s was also very anti-communist, and also during pretty bad part of the Cold War. So he's like, why would he be elected but not Joseph Siri? So it's a good question.
I couldn't find anything on your version of the Red Pope. There is something called the Red Pope, but it's like the Pope's assistant within the Vatican. At least that's as far as I was able to get with it. And when I tried to look up any communist popes, John Paul was the headliner, but there were a few others that were listed. I don't recall if there was a Pope Gregory among them. Mm. Most popes at the time were definitely anti-communists. If you go back a couple decades further, they were not anti-fascists. There were a couple popes that the Catholic Church as a whole sort of worked with the Nazis to move artwork and gold and other monies out of Jewish-owned banks and from Jewish families over the course of the Third Reich's rise. So the Catholic Church does not have a great track record when it comes to anti-fascist movement, especially those within Europe at the time. But yeah, they definitely helped the Nazis. What about your thoughts on that, Chris, as far as growing up in the 80s, a turbulent time, Cold War, PJP?
Yeah, I don't really remember, because at that point, I don't think I was really following anything that the church was doing. I don't really have any recollection of that. I don't know that I have anything to contribute on this one. I mean, it sounds, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a mistake was made. Mm-hmm. It happens. People are fallible, you know. So yep. I don't know. I don't have much to go on.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not much convinced on the communist aspect. However, it's just the part about Siri getting sufficient votes and a chosen name that like strikes my attention, because that's not even like a theory. That's a fact.
Yeah, if it's documented, then
it was during that voting process. It was documented that he got enough, and then he chose the name. And it's not like it's a couple years earlier. Like, it was that time. And then white to black. So, I don't know. That part could just be a coincidence. Or the conspiracy theorists are going the wrong direction. Either way.
Mm.
I think it's pretty
cool. Yeah, I'm just trying to remember if I saw anything about that on the news way back then. Because it definitely would have made the news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, not the church does not have a great track record when it comes to human rights.
And then that leads us to the final.
Yeah, one last one, the corpse trial. So, oh,
interesting.
Pope Formosus was a pope during the 800s, late 800s. It was
Formosus, he was actually pope for 5 years.
Five years.
Yeah. 897.
897. And then he died, as popes usually did. Yeah, and I forget the other pope's name. Who was the pope after him? I forget his name.
Stephen the Sixth.
All right, so Stephen, Stephen, whatever his name was.
Stephen.
Stephen. Is it not Stephen?
No, Stephen.
So Stephen decided that...
man, he's just got to be on right
now. Pope Formosus was fairly controversial. There was a whole family issue where he supported this one noble family, and then the rest of the like cardinals or something didn't. And they support like the opposite, or like he was like a black sheep in an aspect with family issues. And it was this whole political thing. And basically people were mad about it. And when things settled and everyone pretty much agreed on what to think about this family issue, you know, like when it was finally like stopping. So still after he died, he stopped being as controversial and everyone more or less agreed. Or if you didn't, you were quiet about it. They decided, okay, we have to hold this guy on trial, all right, after he has been dead for 7 months at this point, or nine, depending on who you ask, still several months. So they got this corpse of Pope Formosus, and the trial was held by Pope Stephen, the Pope directly after him, and they held him on trial, liable for that whole family issue thing, and they found him guilty, because... I guess he was defending himself.
Well, no, they had a deacon appointed on his behalf.
And I guess he wasn't good, or the other guy was better. Either way, he was held liable.
Generally, the dead guy's probably going to lose regardless.
Mm-hmm. He was held liable, he was held guilty. So they cut off his three fingers for blessings, so he couldn't bless people anymore, which I doubted he would. And then they threw him in a river and re-killed him. They re-executed him. So,
why?
It was the River Tigris, actually.
Tiber.
Why would anyone do that? Like, because
he was guilty.
He's already dead.
But he was guilty. They had to do something. They couldn't let him get off scot-free.
He was already dead.
So, since this trial was so bizarre and cursed, the three popes after Stephen, who would talk about this trial, didn't matter their opinion. Didn't matter if it was like, yo, that was low-key messed up. Or if they were like, yes, I'm glad this happened. Or even if they just mentioned, like, yo, remember Pope Formosus? They would mysteriously die shortly after. I believe within a week, one of them only after 22 days of being pope. So it was coincidental. So these popes, and as Dad has mentioned, it's like, oh, well, back then medicine was really bad. You know, they could have gotten, like, the common cold. Also, they were probably fairly old, considering that they were cardinals for a long time. That's how the pope election process works. You'll never really find one under 50. But at the same time, like, the times of death were always directly after they would talk about the corpse trial, and it was three in a row. So I don't know if the fourth guy just didn't talk about it, if he was able to get free, but many people believe it was the almost like the movie Poltergeist, where the corpse of Pope Formosus was disturbed, and then he wanted to seek vengeance. Other people think it was a silencing of the Vatican saying, no, stop talking about that, all right? That was like a one-time thing. So then they killed them. Some people think it was silencing. Some people think it was haunting. Some people think it was a coincidence, but I like that story.
The first rule of corpse trial is we don't talk about the corpse.
Yeah, we don't talk about the corpse trial. Who's Formosus? I hardly know him.
So who is Formosus? What was that, Colin?
I don't know why they would do the corpse trial. It just sounds so stupid.
Who's this corpse mitosis guy you keep talking about?
I tried to get some highlights from Pope Formosus, who was pope from 897 to, was it 902?
That would be 5 years.
And at one point, as a priest, he fled Rome and was excommunicated. He was then pardoned after a period of time, but still remained in exile. He returned to Rome in the 1880s and was absolved by Pope Marinus. He was elected successor to Pope Stephen V and he tried to liberate Rome from the co-emperors Guy II and his son Lambert. Pope Stephen VI exhumed him and put him up in the finery that befits a pope and gave him representation from a deacon in the church. And he was accused of usurping the papacy. So in other words, it sounds like Stephen VI was a little upset that he got overlooked and was not made pope when probably the mate deals that he made at the time were ones that were going to get him that seat. Pope Formosus was found guilty, and all acts during his papacy were nullified. His body was restripped of everything they put him in for the trial. They did cut off the three fingers of benediction. That's what it's known as. Mm-hmm. And his body was thrown in the Tiber, and that's what the ancient Romans did to dispose themselves of what they called infamous criminals. So he was a real pope for about 5 years. And after he died from, let's say, natural causes at the time, because there was no speculation on how he died other than that, he was brought back, tried, found guilty, and tossed into the river. Very, very Christ-like, I think.
Very Rasputin-esque.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have they got to try and kill this guy?
Those are the top five that Ian wanted to talk about. One of the things, all right. Chris, I don't know. I thought I left it in the last episode, but Ian went on a 5 to 6 minute rant about pyramids, aliens, and conspiracy theories as a whole, which is what led us to this. And actually, I kind of like it. I like the idea of coming up with different odd things you don't normally hear about.
Yeah. I'm sorry I missed that last episode. That would have been fun.
Well, it is available.
One, but I probably should have done that before joining in on this recording.
Yeah. It just talks about our island hopping adventures.
And how people disregard Egyptian intelligence. Ancient Egyptian intelligence.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's going to be the preamble to this one. So if you missed it last one, you'll get it this one.
It's just so annoying. Wait, what? I'm about to start ranting again.
Here we go again.
All right, let's have the rant.
All right. So, conspiracy theorists always talk about, like, Stonehenge and, like, the pyramids and stuff, right? First of all, you want to know why so many civilizations make those pyramids? It's not as aspects of the gods. Well, it is for them. It's not as, like, shrines to the gods and all those gods for one race of aliens that would just, like, swoop in and be like, hey, what's up, right? Worship us. About a dip. That's why we haven't seen them. No, that's not it. It's because think of the most stable structure you can possibly make. It's a pyramid. All right, the top can't possibly fall over if the base is bigger than not only all the levels leading up to the top, but also the very top. All right, it literally can't fall over, especially if you make it heavy enough. All right, unless if you make it out of cardboard, it's not going to fall. So that's why they're all tall. All right, if you want to make a shrine to the gods, you want to make it tall. You want to make it noticeable. You want them to be able to see it. You want to make the tallest building without having hugely advanced architectural intelligence. You make a pyramid. That's just, it's just an axiom of architecture. It's an axiom of architecture. It's an axiom of architecture. You make a pyramid, all right? So the other thing, how was they, like, laser cut, you know? They were made of limestone, all right? How do you cut through limestone with that Bronze Age materials? Because they didn't use bronze to cut through limestone, all right? They probably thought of that. They were like, how do we cut through this? All right, they use their kopesh, you know, they use their saws, and they're like, this takes too long. Then they look to their left, and they look to their right. They look everywhere. There's sand, all right? Have you ever fallen against sand? It gives you rug rash. If you grind sand into something, it'll work as, like, a super efficient saw. So that's what they did. And those are records, too. They would cut through stuff by putting sand in between the object and the blade. And then when they had a crevice, they'd put sand in the crevice, and then they would put a saw against it, or even just a smooth blade, and it would work so much better. They would grind it using sand, and it worked. Also, with the laser-cut precision, want to know how to always make sure something is level? Water. Water level never changes anywhere you are, or anywhere that they could get to. It would never change if it wasn't running, all right? it would be even be as much as putting a bowl of raw water next to it. And then they could just use that, all right? They could, even if they really want to be extreme, they could flood it for a couple of days. Then they could use that. It's not that hard to make something level when you have a full river, the Nile, right next to you. That's the entire reason why they survived. They worshipped it, literally. So it's just people demean the Egyptians. Also, they're like, how even after cutting the limestone, right, even using the sand, you know, not even with the help of aliens, how would they get it up there? How would they pick that up? Who said they picked it up?
They never picked it up. That would be stupid.
They can't pick it up. They would need a colossus. They would need an alien to pick it up. All right. People were like, even modern day cranes couldn't pick it up because they didn't pick it up. They dragged it. All right. They put a ramp. They put a ramp. They would drag it up the ramp.
What would they use to drag it?
Ropes. Slaves. Well, not even slaves, technically.
Logs. They would use the logs as rollers.
Yeah. Even if they didn't have the logs, they could still drag it.
Yeah.
If they had enough, there were?
Things that size, you're going to need the logs underneath to reduce the amount of friction.
But there you go. They have logs.
Sand, because the thing will be just basically be sitting on this big... The sand itself would actually hinder your progress. You would have to put it on logs and roll it and just keep swapping the logs, take the ones from the back, swap them to the front, keep going.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. So they would use logs and then they would drag it, right? You can explain the laser cut precision. You can explain how heavy they were. You can explain how they brought it up, right? There's literally nothing else. Why would they make these random, huge, intricate pyramids if they're not like... worshipping the gods, because they were worshipping the gods. The gods didn't have to be aliens. People have been coming up with gods for years. You ask a random crackhead on the street, he has his own god, all right? Everyone comes up with gods. You don't have to see an alien to come up with it. Also, they weren't just random buildings. They were tombs. That's something a lot of people forget about. They act like they're just random objects in the middle of nowhere. The pyramids of Giza are just random architecture for the sake of architecture. No. They are tombs, and they believed that it is more valuable to be a royal and dead than to be living in general. They believed that the most important thing you could do in life, assuming you were rich, is die. So they would put you in a coffin, their version of
sarcophagus.
Mummify you, put you in a sarcophagus, fill you with, like, not fill you, but fill your tomb with a bunch of gold, like what King Tut had, like 100 plus canes, right? And then they would put you in a tomb in a pyramid, all right? And people are like, oh, what do the Mayans have? Pyramids are easily thought of to be stable. And it's just people disregard the intelligence of ancient humans simply because they can't come up with it themselves. And it's just annoying. You're like,
well, I'm gonna join in on you for a little bit. I mean, they act like these people from 1,000 years ago had the intelligence of a houseplant.
Yeah.
And it's not the case. They were very intelligent people. They didn't have all the math and stuff that we, you know, have today, but they were still very intelligent people, and they were adept at recognizing patterns and using what they understood as far as physics and mechanics. They knew how to make stuff.
They had 10,000 years to do it.
They knew what they were doing. So, yeah, I'm with you. They weren't morons.
Yeah, and they had, like, 10,000 years to plan it, even if they couldn't come up with it, you know? Like, yeah, they were made in, like, roughly 20 years, what, each? Or until, I think it was, like, each. But even, I forget what the recorded amount of time it took for them. Either way, the amount of time the Egyptians survived was crazy. We are to King Tut. No, we are to Cleopatra, but Cleopatra was to pyramids in terms of time. Right.
We're closer to Cleopatra than Cleopatra was to the beginning of the...
Yes.
All right.
Oh, that's creepy. Yeah.
So they had so much time to just plan it. And then they had so much time to do it. It's like, it's not that hard to come up with something at that point where you're like thinking about it for so long. And they didn't even take that long to think about it. Like, even assuming...
Well, especially if it's a tomb. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not like, well, the guy's dead. Well, he's not going anywhere, so... Yeah. All right.
But like, we have to do this before he dies.
You don't have to build it quickly.
And it's, what is he going to do? Complain?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry. What was the point of this rant?
People disregard the intelligence of ancient humans.
Yeah.
Stonehenge, okay.
I back you up on that.
Stonehenge, I can't explain, though.
They dug the rock out of quarries not that far from...
It's pretty far.
They still...
The stone wasn't traceable for miles close to it.
But they would use rollers.
Well, the main question for that is just why. That's the part that I don't understand. It's like, why? Why did they bring in rocks from way far away?
Like, at least the Egyptians...
And if they're going to do that effort, why didn't they shape them better?
Yeah, like...
If you're transporting them that far, why not shape them better? And then, actually, why not just make Stonehenge out of wood? That way you can keep it up. Keep replacing parts of it and, you know, refine parts of it as things change, as you learn more.
Yeah, like, at least the Egyptians, like, there were mummies in the tombs. They were pyramids, and there was recorded history of it, and we know that they worshipped the dead. So, like, they clearly have a reason for it. Stonehenge, like, it just baffles me. Like, why would you do that? Like, you're just, you're
reconciling. It's a calendar. For them, it was a calendar.
It was?
When this, yeah. It showed you when the spring equinox was, summer equinox, and the phases of the moon.
How?
The stones are lined up. So, like, right, so here's where the sun is at the highest point in
here's where it is summer season. As it here it rises
the lowest
on
point
horizon,
in the winter
yeah.
season. Here it is at the equinox. Here it is at the...
Yep. Mm. It's all about the phases of the moon, the sun, with respect to the seasonal changes. And it was pretty darn accurate.
Once you hit the equinox, it's like, all right, now you know days are going to get shorter. And we're getting closer to harvest time. And, you know, we're going to start to... It's the calendar that kicks off a whole bunch of survival behavior.
Yeah.
You know, we know that, okay, the sun is now... We're past the winter solstice. We know spring is on the way. We can get ready to start planting.
And a lot of your cultures in those temperate zones would have similar structures, ways to tell when spring is, when summer is, and when to plant, when to harvest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay. I actually never knew that part.
Yeah.
So I guess I know why now. It's just it's in the middle of a field. But then again, there could have been something around that, you know. So that one. Okay. that one's like just, I don't know. It's still more confusing to me just because like, it's from stone so far away. Like Uncle Chris said, why couldn't you just do that with wood? Or even, like, not even with wood, because then that could, like, fall apart and you'd have to constantly replace it. And, like, on one hand, you could replace it. And on the other hand, you'd have to replace it, you know? You didn't really have to replace the Stonehenge because it's made of, like, really heavy stone. But, like, why couldn't you use something closer?
So I don't know what the geological makeup of that area is. What if the stone... in that area would not shape right. What if it, I mean, so we have what's known as shale in our area here. Yeah. You try to chisel shale and it's just going to splinter and fracture.
Yeah.
Perhaps there was something similar about the quality of the stone makeup there.
Okay.
All right. Who knows?
And that's, and that's the point where I was like, I hate conspiracy theories, except for Catholic conspiracies. I believe in that. And then Dad was like, okay, find some. I was like, okay. So that's the point.
I think we might have to come up with like a conspiracy of the month.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds like good idea. Every month we discuss about a new conspiracy.
I'll either disprove it
or believe it.
Or believe it.
Chris, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. Well, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. I don't know how much I contribute. I'm sorry.
Well, no, your insights on
the black hole theory.
The black hole theory was really good.
Yeah. Well, this was fun. Thank you for having me.
And hopefully we can do this again.
You've inspired us to launch a podcast as well.
So. Really?
Awesome.
So, ooh, cool.
We'll let you in on the details of that a little later.
That sounds fine,
You guys have had some fun. And you inspired us to like, hey, let's have some fun with this. Maybe we can do this.
Is it called Creek Canyon?
So I had an idea of a podcast.
Time travel? I could do an entire podcast on time travel. I'm just letting you know.
We'll have to do that then.
Yeah.
It's a yoga podcast. All right. So I'd be at this end. I'm like, okay, now it's time for downward dog.
No.
And then it'd be like 5 minutes of just absolute silence. Okay. Now breathe in and breathe out.
And in the middle of it, you should just scream. In the middle of like a random like meditative point, you should just scream bloody murder.
Yeah. Yeah, yoga podcast.
Ian, I feel like you could make an entire podcast by yourself about conspiracy theories.
Oh, someone already beat me to it. There's a guy I watch named Mini Miniman.
There's a lot of people that beat you to
it. But Mini Miniman is my favorite.
He's, title.
How? It's a mini Minuteman.
Yeah. Title.
Yeah. But you could make another one.
No. There's everything I know comes from him.
Okay.
That whole what?
Into the mic. You're like that, 5 feet away from the mic.
That whole point about like the Egyptians being intelligent. Like I got all that information from that guy. All right.
Okay.
From cryptids to conspiracy theories, there's not a shortage anywhere.
Nope.
So,
you know, Wendigo actually don't have deer skulls, according to the original myths.
That's my brother Chris, my sons Ian and Colin.
Nope.
Thanks for joining us here at Canyon Creek, and come on back.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yep.